All right, everyone, get ready for a deep dive. We're going to get into injection molding today.
Sounds good.
Specifically, residual stress. You know that hidden force inside plastic parts? It can really make or break a product.
Right.
You gave me some fascinating sources, and I'm ready to dig in.
Yeah, residual stress, it's a big deal in injection molding. You can't always see it, but it really affects a lot, like how long a product lasts and even how it looks.
Yeah, it's like a hidden flaw, just waiting to cause problems. So let's start at the beginning. Our sources all say that uneven cooling and shrinkage are the main causes of residual stress.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
So imagine this. You've got molten plastic, right? And it's injected into a mold. That outer layer, touching the cold mold, it hardens super fast.
Mm-hmm.
But the inside, well, it's still hot and gooey for a while.
So it's like a race inside the mold.
Exactly.
Right.
And then as everything cools, it shrinks. But it shrinks at different rates.
That's got to cause tension, right?
Yeah, it's like a tug of war happening right inside the material. And the faster it cools, the more tension you get. That means more residual stress.
Okay, so cooling rate is a big factor.
Yeah.
But our sources also say that different plastics shrink at different rates too. Is that where choosing the right material comes in?
Absolutely. Picking the right plastic is crucial. Polycarbonate is a good example. It's often used in low stress situations.
Okay.
It's all about its molecular structure. Polycarbonate's molecules, they allow it to cool and shrink more evenly than some other plastics. So you get less of that internal stress.
So it's not just the material, but how its molecules behave when it cools.
Exactly. And another thing we need to consider is thermal conductivity. That's how well a plastic lets heat out.
Yeah.
A material with high thermal conductivity, it'll cool more evenly.
Mm.
So less chance of those big temperature differences that cause stress.
That makes sense. So choosing the right material is step one to a less stressful product. But what about the mold itself? Does the mold's design affect residual stress?
Oh, the mold is super important. It's like it controls how the cooling happens.
Ah.
A well-designed mold, it makes sure heat is pulled out evenly from the whole part. You don't want those hot spots, you know, where the stress builds up.
Gotcha. So you've got the material, you've got the mold, and it sounds like it takes real teamwork to make sure everything works perfectly.
Got it.
Okay. One of our sources mentioned the melt flow index. Mm-hmm. What exactly is that?
Oh, the melt flow index. That's a good one. It basically tells us how easily the melted plastic flows. You know, it's a measure of viscosity. Like a high melt flow index means the plastic flows like water. A low index, it's thicker, more like honey.
Okay, I'm with you.
Now, here's why that's important. If a plastic is too thick, it might not fill up the mold all the way or evenly. And then you get pressure points, and that can lead to stress.
Right, right.
But if the plastic flows too easily, it might cool too quickly in spots, again, causing that uneven shrinkage.
So you don't want it too thick, you don't want it too thin.
Exactly.
Goldilocks, huh?
Yeah.
And this is where molecular weight comes into play too, right?
You got it. So molecular weight, that's basically the length of those molecular chains that make up the plastic. Longer chains mean a higher molecular weight, and usually that means the plastic is thicker, flows slower, good for strength, but you might have to adjust things so you don't get too much stress.
Okay, so we're seeing all these different things that cause residual stress.
Mm-hmm.
What if we could predict these stress points?
Yeah.
Before they even happen, is that where simulation tools come in?
You're right on track. Advanced simulations have completely changed how we do injection molding. Tools like finite element analysis or FEA, they let us basically test a design in the computer and see how it'll handle stress.
So like a virtual crash test for our plastic part.
Exactly.
That's amazing. And how do these simulations take into account all those things we've talked about? The material, the cooling rate, the mold design.
So FEA breaks the design down into tiny little pieces.
Yeah.
And it calculates the stresses and strains in each piece. We can put in the specific properties of the material, set the cooling conditions, and even model how the melted plastic flows using another tool called computational fluid dynamics, or CFD.
Wow. So we can basically preview the whole process and see any problems before they even happen.
Exactly. And this means we can make things better before we even make a physical prototype. We can tweak the mold design, adjust the process settings, even try different materials, all virtually, to find the best way to reduce residual stress.
That's incredible. It gives manufacturers so much control. But what about if we already have a product? How can we tell if it has residual stress? Are there any signs to watch for?
There are a few ways to tell if a product has residual stress. Some are more obvious than others. Warping is one of the first things to look for.
Yeah.
So if the parts bend out of shape, that's a pretty good sign that there's uneven shrinkage from residual stress.
That makes sense.
What else? Cracking is another big one, obviously. Residual stress will concentrate at weak points, and that makes the product more likely to crack under pressure. You might also see some optical distortions, especially in clear plastics.
Interesting. So those are the visible signs. Are there any hidden dangers, things we might not see right away?
Oh, definitely. Residual stress can weaken a part, even if it doesn't look warped or cracked. It might break more easily than it should, or change shape under stress when it should be able to hold up.
So it's like a time bomb, waiting to go off. This really shows how important early detection is, catching these problems before they cause products to fail or even become dangerous.
You're absolutely right. Finding these issues early is key to making sure products are good quality and safe. There are special tests that can measure residual stress, but those are a bit more technical. The main thing is, manufacturers need to really focus on quality control. They need systems to find and deal with residual stress all through the production process.
Okay, so we've covered a lot in this first part of our deep dive. We've looked at what causes residual stress, the importance of choosing the right material and mold design, and even how simulations can help us predict and prevent it. But what does all this mean for you, the listener? How does this knowledge apply to your work and your industry? We'll explore those questions and more when we come back for the second part of our deep dive.
Welcome back. You know, before the break, we were talking about how residual stress affects products in the real world. And it's not always about big failures, like something breaking completely. Residual stress can actually make a product get worse over time in sneaky ways.
That's interesting. I was thinking about things that are exposed to temperature changes all the time, like stuff you use outside or in engines. Mm-hmm. Does residual stress make those things wear out faster?
Absolutely. Think about how things expand when they get hot and shrink when they cool down,
right?
That's thermal expansion. If you've got a plastic part that already has a lot of stress inside, those temperature swings just make it worse. You get warping, cracking, even early failure.
So it's like the material is fighting itself.
Exactly.
And then temperature changes make it even worse.
Right. And that's why material science is so important now. We're seeing new plastics that are made to change size less with temperature changes. They have a lower coefficient of thermal expansion.
So by choosing the right material, you're basically making it stronger against those environmental stresses.
Exactly. It's all about understanding how the material behaves, how it's processed, and what it's going to be used for. And that's where those simulation tools we talked about earlier really come in handy.
Right. It's like having a lab in the computer where you can try out different things. Can you give me an example of how these simulations are used in real life?
Sure. Let's say we're designing a complex car part, something with weird shapes and thin walls. We can use FEA to analyze how the melted plastic flows during injection. That helps us find areas where the material might cool too fast or create too much stress.
So it's not just about the overall shape, but even those little details that can affect how the plastic flows and cools.
Exactly. We can even look closely at specific features, like the gate where the melted plastic goes into the mold. By changing the gate's size and position, we can make the flow better and reduce those high-stress areas.
It's incredible that we have so much control over these tiny details, and I guess the cooling system is just as important, right?
Absolutely. Where you put the cooling channels in the mold and how they're designed, that's key to getting even cooling. Simulations help us get those channels just right, so heat is pulled out from everywhere in the part. That means fewer temperature differences and less residual stress.
It's like we're shaping the temperature inside the mold.
That's a great way to think about it. And the cool thing is, we can test all these different cooling strategies in the computer without having to actually make anything. No wasting time or money on physical prototypes.
So you can keep tweaking the design until you find the best way to minimize residual stress. Working smarter, not harder, right?
Exactly. And by reducing residual stress, we're not just making better products, we're making them more sustainable too.
Oh, that's an interesting connection. How does residual stress relate to sustainability?
Well, think about it. If a product doesn't have too much stress inside, it's less likely to warp, crack, or break. So it's going to last longer, which means people won't need to replace it as often, and that means less waste.
So even this small hidden problem of residual stress, when you fix it, it has a big impact on the whole life of the product.
Absolutely. It shows how everything is connected in manufacturing, material science, engineering, the environment. It all comes together.
It's a whole new way of thinking about design and production. You mentioned that these simulations are getting even better. Are there any new advancements that you're excited about?
One really exciting thing is how we're starting to use artificial intelligence, or AI, and machine learning in these simulation tools. Imagine a system that can look at tons of data from past simulations and real tests, and then predict the best way to make a new part.
It's like the software is actually learning.
Right. And that's just the beginning. We're also seeing new sensor technologies that can be put right into the mold. They can give us real-time information about the temperature, the pressure, even how the plastic is flowing.
Wow, it's like being able to see inside the mold while it's working.
Exactly. It's a big step forward for quality control and making things better. And as these technologies keep getting better, we'll have even more control over residual stress. That means stronger, more reliable products that last longer.
This deep dive has been amazing. We've learned about what causes residual stress and also explored some amazing solutions that are changing the future of injection molding. But let's not get lost in the technical stuff. What about you, the listener? How can you use what you've learned in your own work or industry? What are some of the key takeaways you can use to make your own products or processes better? We've been on quite a journey in this deep dive, haven't we?
We have.
Exploring this hidden world of residual stress in injection molding. We've gone from tiny molecules all the way to those high-tech simulations and AI. It's pretty clear that this invisible force really affects the stuff we use every day.
You're right, it does. And while we've talked a lot about the technical side, the important part is how you, the listener, can use what we've learned. Whether you're a designer, an engineer, or working in a factory, understanding residual stress can make a big difference in your work.
So let's make this practical. Let's say you're working with a brand new plastic material. What are some of the things you should think about in terms of residual stress?
Well, the first thing is to really get to know that material's data sheet. Look for those key properties, like the coefficient of thermal expansion, the melt flow index, and anything about shrinkage rates. That'll give you a basic idea of how the material will behave when you're molding it.
So it pays to do your research.
Right.
It's not just about picking the strongest or cheapest plastic, but the one that fits what you're making and how you're making it.
Exactly. And this is where talking to each other is really important. Talk to the mold designer, tell them about the material. Work together to design a mold that cools evenly and avoids those stress
It's
points.
all about teamwork.
Right.
It's not just about what each person knows, but bringing all that knowledge together.
Exactly. And if you have access to those simulation tools, use them. Even if you're not a pro with FEA or CFD, just running some basic simulations can really help you see where those stress hotspots might pop up.
It's like having a virtual expert looking over your shoulder.
Exactly. And don't be afraid to try things out. Simulations let you test different gate positions, change the cooling channels, even play around with the processing settings. You can see how all that affects the residual stress.
It's all about finding that perfect balance.
Right.
The material, the mold, how it's all processed.
Right.
And as we've talked about, those fancy technologies like AI and sensors are giving us even more tools to fine-tune that balance.
Absolutely. The future of injection molding is looking pretty exciting. We're getting to a point where we can not only predict and prevent residual stress, but actually use it to make products even better.
No, that's interesting. So instead of always being a bad thing, residual stress could actually be helpful sometimes.
Definitely. There are already ways to do that, like pre-stressing. That's where you purposely add a little bit of stress in a controlled way to make a part stronger or last longer under stress.
Wow, it's like turning the tables on residual stress,
Yeah.
using it to our advantage.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important to stay curious and keep learning new things. Injection molding is always changing, and the more we understand about residual stress, the more we can innovate.
That's a great point to end on. We've dug deep into the science and the practical applications of residual stress. But really, it's that curiosity and that drive to keep learning that will push this field forward.
I agree. So as you keep working, think about how residual stress plays a role in what you're doing, ask questions, and look for those hidden chances to make your products and processes better.
And if this deep dive has gotten you thinking and you want to learn more, reach out and tell us what you're thinking or ask us any questions. We'd love to keep the conversation going and explore even more about this fascinating topic. Thanks for listening.